All right, Tim, at Baltimore Comic Con, the 20th anniversary of Baltimore Comic Con, and I'm standing here with James Asmus, and we are going to talk comics. Sir, how are you?
I'm doing really well. This is one of my favorite shows to do, so I always feel better being here.
Very good. Now, I have a question for you. You came on my radar because of Quantum and Woody. I loved Quantum and Woody.
Thank you.
What was it like being a big part of that rebirth of Valiant?
It was really, really empowering and wonderful as a creator. I'll be honest, I was one of the first people to say I don't personally need another shared superhero universe when it was starting up. And then they physically handed me some of their comics at a show, and they were like, go home and read these. And I love Fred Van Lente, who launched Archer and Armstrong for them. He's a friend of mine. So I was like, well, I'll definitely read that. And read it, and I loved it. And it was so purely Fred. And a lot of times in comics, you're allowed to be 80% you, or 60% you, or maybe even less. But I was like, that is 100% Fred. And then I went to read some of the other ones where I was like, maybe that's not my concept. And I was like, oh, these are like passion project books. And that really made me inspired. And with Quantum and Woody, I ended up writing this pitch that I said to my wife. I was like, I love it so much that I think if they say, we'll give you the job, but we want you to change this, this, and this, I think I'll be like, I don't think I can do it, because I think that is the story. And then they came back and said, we love it. Do exactly what you wrote. And I was like, oh, this is wonderful.
That's great. That's great to hear. Now, you've done a lot of Quantum and Woody. Do you have any inkling to go back to them, or not really?
I definitely had a couple other stories that I think I would have done as the resolve of what I was doing with them. But because I had to step away before that, and then other things have been done with them, I don't think it wouldn't work the same. And so, like, maybe someday I would, but I think what I would have done wouldn't feel true anymore with respect to what other people who I love have done. So, like, the other writers who have done it since are all genuinely, like, friends of mine and people I think are also hilarious, wonderful writers, so.
We could talk trash on them anyways. If they're your friends, they might like it.
Well, no, I mean, like, truthfully, I wish I could. I wish I could have been, you know, the ex-boyfriend who's like, oh, she's with that loser now. I'm much better looking. But I was like, oh no, they're treating her right, and they're so handsome and funny. It's a real bummer for me, actually.
Well, you're my favorite Quantum and Woody writer, so there you go.
Thank you very much.
Now, you also have done Evolution. That's a wildly different book. Now, how did that come to be?
So that is a global pandemic body horror told kind of from three different perspectives, not just of characters, but of worldviews. So a character trying to investigate it through science, one through faith, and then a pair of girls who couldn't care less. They're just trying to live their lives. And it's really about how people cope with difficulty and change and scary upheaval in life. And the idea was for that to be written like writer's room style by a bunch of guys who live in Portland. And so Josh Williamson, Joseph Keating, and Chris Sabella originally were on the team before I moved to Portland. And then Josh signed exclusive with DC, and this was kind of in that gray area. And so they then were like, well, hey, do you want to tag in and kind of like do it with him and then take over? And I've been a huge horror fan my whole life, but because I kind of got known for comedy, I don't get offered horror, and I was like, hell yes, I want to do this. So that's been a joy in such a different world to play in. But yeah, we got to do 18 issues of very thoughtful, character driven like dread horror. So that was a blast.
So since you love horror, and I'm going to let you pitch your horror here, your love of horror, do you prefer like the schlocky B-movie kind of horror? Do you prefer, like, as an example, I spoke with Ed Brisson. Ed Brisson's doing a Contagion book at Marvel. It feels like a B-movie, like lovingly. Would you want to do something like that? Are you all about slashers? Like, where is your favorite place in horror?
Yeah, so my sweet spot is the kind of horror that is maybe slightly more ambitious than it's able to pull off, right? Okay. And so I like horror that is trying to be about something and it has ideas on its mind, whether it can pull it off fully or not. So, and I mean, I love the successful ones. I love Carpenter's The Thing. I love the early Romero zombie movies. I love The Stuff. You know what I mean? Like Society. I am working on a project we'll announce in a few months that'll be a horror book with Lucas Kettner, who's currently drawing Crowley for Dark Horse, which is just coming out this month, and he did Witch Doctor for Skybound before.
I loved Witch Doctor.
Yeah, me too. I was just a fan of that book, and then when I moved to Portland, we became friends, and I was like, can I write something for you?
Portland sounds magical the more you say this.
It really is. I mean, like, so there's a studio there of wonderful artists, and every time I walk in, I'm like, oh yeah, you're here. I want to write something for you, and you're great. And you're... So it's been wonderful. I lived in Los Angeles. There's a ton of creators there, but the nature of the city or the culture or whatever, they just don't get together as much. And Portland really has, like, social outings and gatherings, and maybe having the studio as a central point helps that. But it's been much more of a community, so I do love that. But yeah, anyway, Lucas and I are working on a horror book that very much kind of draws from, like, Society and some other, I think, kind of like light social commentary but still fun B horror movie stuff.
I love the B stuff myself.
Yeah.
So now, completely switching gears again, this is why this is such a fun interview for me. So you've also done a lot of properties. You did Transformers. You did My Little Pony. Not that they're exclusively for children, but you did these properties that children know.
Yeah.
What is it like to get in that frame of mind going from, because Evolution, you would probably just, you were in the middle of that too, right?
For a lot of this, I was doing it simultaneously. So yeah, last year I did a pair of these kind of all ages, middle grade reader Bumblebee projects.
The Bumblebee book, everybody loved. Everybody raves about it.
I loved it. I really felt like, so for both of these, it was like when my kids were getting into stuff and we were watching it, if I liked it too, then I was like, oh, I want to go hit up the editors and see if I can write something for that. And I genuinely thought My Little Pony was super funny and ended up meeting the editor for that. And I was like, could I do it? Because my kid would love it. And I just had fun. I had more fun writing My Little Pony than I think anything in the last like 2 years. So that was just joyful. And then, the Transformers. I was a huge Transformers fan as a kid. And so kind of using my son as an excuse to like get back into that world has been wonderful, to just dig back through a whole bunch of cartoons, new ones, old ones. He loves the 86 cartoon movie, and so that's on heavy rotation for us. But yeah, getting to write for that and have an excuse to buy toys for quote-unquote research, if you're listening, IRS, it was research.
They're not, but...
And you're right. There's so much of this jumping around in what I write, and I love it. It feels fresh. It feels exciting. It makes me, after 3 hard days of deadlining, excited to get up tomorrow to write again, because I'm exercising a different muscle. I'm playing in a different playground. Way back in the early part of my life, I trained to be an actor, and I thought that was going to be my whole life, and that turned into playwriting, which turned into writing other kinds of scripts and led me to comics, which I had always loved, but I had no idea how you get into comics.
I don't know if anybody does.
Yeah. And so, to me, I love switching tones and worlds and audiences, because to me that feels like changing parts as an actor. But I do think it might hurt my like career or like audience building in a way, where there are plenty of people who might not follow me from My Little Pony to Evolution or whatever. So I'm trying to be a little more conscious of maybe doing like focusing on the middle 60%, you know, so a little more overlap in the Venn diagram.
It's probably a good strategy. It seems sound.
Yeah. So I'll always cave and do something if it's just too appealing to some weird part of me. But I really am increasingly thinking about the fact that very few people share all of my loves. And right. So it might be hard for them to like just commit to following me from all around.
I agree with you completely. I always say on the podcast, whenever we're talking about different things, I'm like, I always say my opinion, but I always follow it up by I would sell out so fast for certain things, and it would be, because I'm not a huge X-Men guy. That's always the joke on the thing.
Ah.
And it's like, who isn't an X-Men guy? And I'm like, but I would sell out so quick to write an X-Men book. I don't care. throw a bird guy on there. I got it.
Well, yeah, that's like, I've had a few times where someone asked me to write something that I didn't love, and those were just harder. Like, honestly, it took more of my time. It was less fluid of an experience in a way that I've really come to appreciate. Like, sometimes you can fall in love with something you didn't before when you really start thinking about what you could do with it and a story you might want to tell. But I've really come to realize I don't want to force it anymore, and so I'm trying to avoid taking anything I'm not really excited about.
Well, that's a good way of going about it. Now, I'm going to wrap us up here talking about field tripping, because I want you to get back to this con here in Baltimore, this insanity. So tell me about field tripping. This is really cool.
Yeah, thank you. So in talking about trying to blend all the different things I like, this book really does it. We're doing this for Comixology Originals, so it's exclusive to Comixology. If you do a trial of the Unlimited program or sign up for that, like their Netflix version, it'll just be included with that. Or you could still buy the issues. It's also on Amazon anyway. But what it is the short pitch is basically like, what if the magic school bus had a quantum leap problem? And so, you know, in this, it's a teacher who's got a device that can bring her students to parallel worlds to teach them different things about science or history or whatever. But they're kids, so they break the machine, because all of these children's cartoons with this wondrous thing, you really shouldn't give it to children. And that's what this is about. So they break it, and minor spoiler, in the first issue, soon thereafter, we hard cut to 7 years later.
Oh, God.
And the kids are teenagers. Most of them are dead. The ones who are left are all horribly transformed by totally different worlds that they had been to. So one kid is trapped in an impervious suit of armor that he can't take off during puberty. You know, the girl who wanted to be a ballerina has her brain transported into a bear's body and is still trying desperately to be graceful and dainty about it. Another girl has had a bunch of limbs replaced with cyborg parts, but from a world where she can't get software updates. So it's constantly forcing error messages, and like, you know, she can't renew a subscription, so it's playing ads when she needs to use life-saving technology.
It's amazing.
And so the plot for the arc is really at the end of the first issue, the teacher is taken from them, and for the first time in their lives, they have to take responsibility and kind of be the adults in the room. So what if you were trapped in your terrible childhood dynamics ramped up to 11 with superpowers and then had to suddenly grow up? So
that is amazingly terrifying.
That's our hope. And it really is, it's one of the most like gonzo books I've ever done. We call it a dark comedy sci-fi that's still all ages. It's really for adults, but it's kid protagonist, so we keep everything just below any threshold that would mean you couldn't give it to your kid. We want it to be like the cool subversive thing the kid feels like they're getting away with something by reading it, you know. The Goonies for this generation.
Every generation needs a Goonies.
Oh yeah, you gotta corrupt them a little, because they have the internet, right? And so like, we're just acknowledging that horrible things are out there, and we're showing some coping mechanisms in the most fun way possible.
Well, James, thank you so much for doing this interview with me, and I wish you all the best.
My pleasure. Have a good show.
Let everybody know where they can find you on social media.
Oh, yeah. Mostly Twitter, at James Asmus. I'm on Facebook, at James Asmus Writes, but Twitter's much more active.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.